Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Hey everyone, this is Laz Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys, and on this week's episode, we're talking about your 12 and 40 Detroit Pistons. It's the week before the trade deadline, and so Ben Gulker and I enlisted James Edwards III of The Athletic to give us the latest on Jeremy Grant trade watch, who the Pistons might be looking at outside of the top three in the 2022 NBA draft, and what the plan is for this offseason. As always, we appreciate your continued support of the podcast. The best way to do that is to share, subscribe, and leave comments. Please leave comments on the discussion post on Detroit Bad Boys. That's the best way for us to have the conversation that we want to have around the podcast. In order to do that, though, you have to follow DetroitBadBoys.com, which you should be doing because it's the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis this season. With all that said, it's time to go to work. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson. Pleased, as always, to be joined by my usual co-host, Ben Gulker. Ben, how's it going?
Laz, doing good, man. Anxious to be talking with you this morning because we're joined by a pretty special guest that I'm going to go ahead and let you introduce, man. So, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, let's do this. Joining us live from Minnesota at 10 o'clock in the morning because the Pistons play at 3:30, James Edwards III of The Athletic. James, how's it going?
Laz, Ben, I'm doing well, guys. I'm in cold-ass Minneapolis, which is somehow colder than Detroit. But I like this city a lot. It's an underrated city. I'd recommend if anybody hasn't been here to get out here. It's a cool place. I want to come here in the summer. I've never been, but I'm doing well. Definitely curious to see how this week shakes out. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And I appreciate that this is your only Sunday podcast because you're not actually doing the bun and cardigan today. So it's like, hey, I get James all to myself today. This is cool.
You guys get the ridiculous rambling that I do. It's all yours.
So obviously, the first thing we want to talk to you about was you going one-on-one with Bryce Simon, aka Motor City Hoops, the next time both of you are in Detroit at the same time. Like, what's the line? Can I gamble on this? Like, what is this going to happen? Should I get the Facebook live stream ready?
I think what we're doing, unless I misread it, I thought it was a shooting contest. If we're doing a shooting contest, I'm feeling good. If it's one-on-one, I'm not going to disrespect Bryce, who is 6'8 and played Division I basketball. That he'll win at. But I thought we were doing a shooting contest. That I think I can hold my own at.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to Bryce. We'll make sure we get that clarified.
Yeah. We definitely need to get that clarified. I need to know if I need to start stretching now or well before time.
Ben, you want in on this? Can you still shoot?
It's been a minute, but yeah, give me 15 minutes to warm up. I'm in. I can do this.
No, obviously we want to talk to James about the Jeremy Grant trade stuff. With the trade deadline 4 days away, it does seem like things are a little bit quieter on the trade front than they were even like a week ago. But at the same time, it always feels like everything kind of gets crammed towards the end. And so just, you know, it is 4 days before, but what are you hearing on the Jeremy Grant trade front, Ben, James?
Yeah, without giving away too much, because I do have a piece coming up. I do my like annual trade deadline guide every Monday before the draft, which is kind of like my last what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. That's up on The Athletic as you're listening to this. But this is how I think it's going to play out. I think it's pretty obvious that in comparison to a year ago when the Pistons were getting offers for Jeremy and they had no interest in trading him, that this year they're not as handcuffed to him. So I think the door is open for a potential trade to happen. Now, with that said, I don't think that the Pistons are eager to make a trade happen. I don't think it's something that has to be done right now. And I think they're kind of just waiting to see when the dust settles, what's the best offer on the table. Is it worth doing now, or is it worth waiting till the offseason to revisit? I think for the Pistons' sake, when it comes to the deadline, and specifically Jeremy, I think it's going to be a lot of like, let's just wait and see what happens. Let's see what's in front of us, what's official, what's real. Does it make sense for us to do it now? Because as you guys know, they don't have to do it now. I know fans are love trade stuff and it wanted to happen as soon as possible, but I don't think keeping Jeremy around through the season is going to mess up the draft positioning. And I think the draft positioning is right now of the utmost importance. And I mean, as you guys know, as two guys who follow the draft, and I know Laz, you do, you follow the prospects pretty closely. The Pistons, there's a good possibility they land in a spot where they end up with one of the power forwards. So I think it's kind of just a wait and see game. I think there are some teams that are interested. I'll spoil the piece with a few. I know obviously you guys have heard about Washington and the Kings. I think Brooklyn has poked around, but I don't think it's they obviously have a bigger
fish. A lot going on right now.
Yeah. and then I think Portland is still in the running too. So
interesting.
You never know. People just have conversations, but those are just some of the teams I've heard. And I know some of those names have been out there already.
Okay. So staying on the topic of Jeremy Grant, staying on the topic of trades, I guess if the Pistons don't make any trades, mm-hmm. James, do you see the Pistons sort of taking a approach with Jeremy Grant like they did last season, which is kind of resting him down the stretch, keeping him healthy and all that kind of stuff? That's what they did a year ago to really secure the draft prospects. Do you see something like that happen again this season if they don't make any significant trades?
That's a good question. I would say no, unless an injury, a different injury pops up. Like, it's obviously clear that his hand is healed. So you can't really kind of rely on fall back on that one. I'm trying to remember what last year was it, like a hip or a knee or something?
Yeah, I think it was a knee.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's possible if there is some more nagging stuff, which I mean, as the season winds down, all players deal with nagging stuff. I think it's possible. But I also don't think, yeah, it's a great question. I don't know. Ask me that after the deadline. That one's tough to answer because clearly there's benefit to both sides. You can put him on ice and get to the offseason and he's healthy, or maybe he shows some things that people want to see in the final stretch and it increases his value. I mean, I think most people know what Jeremy is at this point, but yeah, you just never know. That's a good question.
So we got like a report from Mark Stein that there's a little bit of a, I don't want to say like a split, but the there were different like leaders of the Pistons who were kind of split on the necessity of trading Jeremy right now.
Yeah.
Arne Tellem was on the side, who was like on the business side and not technically part of the basketball operations, but he's Arne Tellem, so you listen to him when he talks. Was thinking it was maybe a little bit more more open to trading Jeremy right now, and obviously Troy Weaver coming down on the side of like maybe it's not as necessary. Is that like something you had also heard? Is that something that you can corroborate? And should that give Pistons fans like pause that there's like too many cooks in the kitchen, I guess?
Yeah, good question. I'll say this. I think, and it's a good thing for the Pistons, because as you guys know, one of the issues with them and them being the organization over the last few years is the kind of the lack of options, the lack of flexibility, the inability to do a bunch of different things. Now, believe it or not, the Pistons have the flexibility to go multiple routes, and whether that's trade Jeremy now, trade Jeremy in the offseason, use the pick this year to obviously add another top five piece, to use the cap space this year or wait next year, rebuild one more year, make a trade instead of signing a guy with the cap space. Like there's options, and with the options, obviously there comes discussions. And I mean, it's pretty with all those options on the table. I think if us three we're all doing a podcast and we're trying to figure out how it's supposed to go, I think we would all have different opinions on how we should go about it. Like, I don't necessarily think it's a power struggle. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's just conversations amongst the people who are decision makers in the front office, all looking at all the options and have the options laid out in front of them. And one person might think this is the better idea, and one person might think that's the better idea. Obviously, Jeremy and Troy have a great relationship, so you could understand why Troy might want to wait, whether that's to keep Jeremy, whether that's to get something he thinks there's something better down the line, whether that's to find a place that Jeremy would be happy with going to, or you just never know. I don't get the sense that there's a power struggle. I think it's Troy's show to run, but I definitely think he, at doing his due diligence, takes the opinion of the people around him. And yeah, I think it's pretty natural when you have options on the table to not always agree on which option is the best one to take. But yeah, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing.
Okay. So all the way on the other side of like the spectrum of trading Jeremy Grant is giving Jeremy Grant the $100 million extension he is apparently seeking. What do you think the possibility of the Pistons offering him that is?
I would be surprised, just simply because I've been writing this a lot lately, and I have a part of it in the piece that's out. It is the Pistons, the draft is of the utmost importance. And if the Pistons land a top three pick, it's very likely that they end up with another front court player. And then if you just kind of look at it, like, does it make sense to extend Jeremy when you have a Jabari, when you have a Paolo, when you have a Chet and an Isaiah Stewart, does that make sense? So I think that's where, when people hear about, is it worth waiting? When we talk about that with regards to the Pistons, that's why, because that would dictate if they end up with fifth or sixth and it's Ben Math or Jaden Ivey, well, then it makes maybe a little bit more sense to keep Jeremy hanging around. You know what I mean? So I think I don't think it's out of the cards. Jeremy likes Detroit. The front office likes Jeremy. But I think the draft, as we've learned for the last year and a half, is really what's dictating where Detroit goes from here for the next year, year and a half, 2 years.
Okay, that makes sense. And I definitely see the utility of that 100%. It would be you don't want to like take for granted that you get a top three pick and end up with a big and then end up with like a roster imbalance.
Right.
But at the same time, like, you are the second worst team in the league.
For sure. So
it makes sense to at least consider that as a possibility. All right. Definitely. That's 12 minutes on Jeremy Grant. I think that's good. I think we can move off of Jeremy Grant and obviously to the next most important person on the Pistons. That's Frank Jackson. Yes. James, you got into people with Frank Jackson's value this past week.
I did not. I honestly did not expect all that. That was crazy. I was just curious.
And then you had the piece, right? The piece came out, and it was like, oh, okay, this makes sense. What kind of value do you think Frank has to like this team in particular? It does seem like he's really leaned on by the coaching staff in a way that he probably wouldn't be other places.
Yeah, no, good question. I think, well, first and foremost, I think Frank is a guy that all the players love, just very upbeat, very positive guy. I think he addresses a pretty big void in the Pistons roster, which is the ability to create your own shot. I know people, when they think of Frank, they think of the nights he has great three-point shooting performances, but he's actually better inside the arc this year. One of the best guards in the NBA at finishing inside the arc. And as you guys know, who like me, or you guys are a little more tortured because you don't have to watch the Pistons every day, but you do. as you guys know, he is very much a guy who can get hot quick, and the Pistons don't have that, really, that type of guy. And I think when people think, and I asked Dwayne this, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, when fans and people think about the future, they think about these players and like, is he a starter for me? What is his, can he reach his potential as a starter? Where does he start? But I think people forget that, like, very few players, when you bring in young pieces, end up being stars. Like, that's why it was so obviously important to get Cade Cunningham, because the majority of these guys end up being very good role players, which is, you look around the league, usually have one or two stars and a bunch of really good role players. Those are the best teams in the league. And I think Frank has the potential to be a spark plug off the bench for many years. He's comfortable in Detroit. Eventually, at some point, Detroit is going to need to get a guy like Frank Jackson if it's not Frank Jackson. So why not kind of keep this guy around who you unlocked, who you kind of unearthed? Like, people knew Frank, five-star recruit, all that, but he struggled. New Orleans, was waived by the Thunder. I think it's kind of a – he's it's not talked about enough. Like, obviously, we talk about the Sadiqs, the Isaiahs, and even more of the Hamidous to an extent, in terms of guys that look what Weaver can do. But Frank Jackson, man, like, that's as good of a poster boy as there is. A guy, second round pick, a little bit undersized for a guard, was really struggling to find his way in the league, and here he is with the possibilities of putting up 25 points every other night. So I think that's good from a franchise standpoint. Like, hey, we found this guy. We recognize his talent. We developed him into a legitimate role player in the NBA. And I think that's important. I think those optics are important. I think having a guy who wants to be in Detroit, who likes his teammates, is important. And people forget, Frank's only 23. He's only like a year younger than Sadiq, or a year older than Sadiq. So I don't know. Is a late first too much for Frank? It possibly could be, for sure. But if I'm Detroit and somebody says, hey, do you want the 28th pick and you give us Frank? I lean toward no, because at the end of the day, you're hoping the 28th pick is Frank. So why not get a guy that's already in-house and, like I said, optimizes the talent evaluation of the organization.
Yeah, I love that. I'm a big Frank Jackson fan. I appreciate all those comments, especially pointing out his youth, right? I mean, he's still super young. He's not a finished product yet, so absolutely.
Not at all. And people talk about, well, he's an undersized guard. It's like, well, he's been fine scoring inside the paint, where usually height is your biggest deterrent. So I don't know, man. He's got a great balance of wiggle and athleticism. Does he project as a long-term starter? Probably not, no. But like, as you guys know, you need those, I mean, for lack of a better comparison, those Lou Will types, those Jamal Crawford types. He obviously doesn't have the wiggle that they have, but you need those guys that can come in and change a game. And as you guys have seen, especially over the last week and a half, Frank can do that no problem.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we had a couple games this week with no Cade Cunningham. And I think what stands out to me and Laz is how unwatchable this team can get at times without Cade. Obviously, still a rookie, still super young. But he seems like he's really the determining factor on whether this team is fun to watch or not at times. I don't know. What's your take on that? James, what do you think about that comment?
Yeah, no, that's I do find that funny because I think in a way, like, Pistons fans are spoiled because Cade wasn't there last year. And I would say a lot of people had fun watching the Pistons, even though they didn't win as much. But also I understand that a few more games were close. I mean, technically, they're still on pace to win as many games as they did last year, despite the bigger blowouts and stuff like that. I enjoy watching Cade as somebody who gets to cover him every day. And obviously, you want to see some good basketball if you're going to sit through all that losing and tough nights. But I mean, I can understand why fans say that. But I don't know. I also enjoy watching the development of Sadiq. I know fans are really starting to turn on Isaiah, but I enjoy watching how hard he plays every night. Like, that's still entertaining to me. I like watching Frank get hot on those every other night occasions. I understand why fans might not want to tune in as much when Cade's not playing, because I mean, he's the number one pick. He's Cade Cunningham, and this organization hasn't had a guy as heralded out of the draft in obviously 50 something years. So I get that, but I also think they're unwatchable sometimes when Cade does play. So you know what I mean? Like, it's not his fault. It's just, they're just not a very good team right now. So I think for the most part, people just are invested in Cade, and they know, like, the success of the franchise moving forward in a way really kind of hinges on his development and what he turns into.
No, that's fair. With that in mind, I know he was listed as questionable on the injury report. Do you think the hip pointer is going to be, when I say a long-term issue, I don't mean like it's going to dog him the rest of his career. I mean, like, right, is he going to play in February?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think so. Dwayne, I know people are like, well, he always says this. He didn't seem concerned.
He does always say that.
Yeah, he does always say that. That's fair. But I would also say people think that he legitimately just says that. He truly lets the medical staff dictate all of that. And he gets information relayed to him, and he relays it to us when he's asked. I think the medical people, it very much is a collaborative effort. If them and Cade and his people don't think it is, let's let Cade say it a little bit, let's let him rest a little bit, I think that's what they'll do. Now, with that said, I wouldn't be surprised if he played today in Minneapolis, but I definitely, if it's not as serious as, they're not making it sound serious, and I tend to believe him. Cade was walking on his own. He was doing the bike. Dwayne said he's going to wear like those, some players wear them like padding on their, like kind of buttocks, hip region. He said he's going to start wearing that. The Pistons play in Dallas on Tuesday. Cade's from Dallas. It'll be his first time in Dallas as a pro. I'd be surprised if, again, it is not serious, I would be surprised if he misses the Dallas game. And that's not me reporting anything. That's just surveying the information given to me and kind of anticipating what's ahead in regards to him entering his hometown for the first time in his career on Tuesday.
Yeah, that is a useful bit of line drawing. I had forgotten. Well, I didn't forget that he was from Texas, but like, I hadn't made that connection. So like, yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
And he's from, yeah, and from Dallas too. So he'll have a lot of people, I'm sure, there. I think his family lives there full time. So yeah.
All right. That's cool. So something you've like hinted at throughout, like even as far back as like last year, but really continuing this season, is that the team like doesn't want to be, they don't want to be like a 12-win team this time next season, right? Yeah. They want to be better than they are right now next season. Mm-hmm. But most of the like big name free agents that they could obtain with the like mound of cap space they're going to have after Blake Griffin's dead money comes off the books, mm-hmm, are going to be restricted guys, right? Like DeAndre Ayton, Miles Bridges, Colin Sexton, like even like a guy like Anfernee Simons is going to be more expensive on the restricted free agent market than I think he was thought at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
So if they're not, if because of the way restricted free agency works, the Pistons aren't able to kind of get any of those targets, do you think they still, you know, pursue the goal of still trying to be better than they are right now without like some of that young talent?
Yeah. I'll say this. I'll say a few things. I think that there are people in the organization who wouldn't mind another rebuilding year, just to acquire again, possibly another top pick, and then mm-hmm go into 2023, which is, I mean, going to be one of the better free agency classes in quite some time with a ton of cap space, which if they elected to go that route, I totally understand. As somebody who has observed the Pistons be impatient for close to a decade, I would almost commend the patience that they're showing this time around. I know fans might not be able to stomach that. Obviously, my perspective on the situation and my job is different than the entertainment aspect of it. So if they elected to rebuild one more year and then try to bring in free agents in 2023, I think that actually makes a lot of sense. But I think there are also a good amount of people who do want to like push for the play-in next year. And what I would say that means is, like you said, Laz, like there are restricted guys. So it would be, it's not a given that you're going to get some of these guys, even if you have the most cap space. I would say also that with that in mind, I think they wouldn't be upset if whatever group that they have next year pushes for the play-in and they end up with the ninth pick or something like that. Like if it's the young guys and maybe a free agent or two, and that ends up winning 31 plus games. I don't think they're mad at that. I don't think they're going to be actively sitting guys down to try to get a top five pick again, I guess is what I mean with that. I think they're ready to see progress from the young guys. And if those guys can carry them to sniffing the play-in, I don't think that would be a problem. But there are names to keep an eye on. I think Jalen Brunson is somebody who could be of interest to Detroit. Obviously a versatile guard who can really score the ball. It's a bulldog, fits the, kind of the personality of the guys that the Pistons are trying to bring in. Another Villanova guy. There's a connection there. He's from Philadelphia, PA. He's from Pennsylvania. I don't know about Philly, but he's from Pennsylvania. I think Arne Tellem might have represented his dad, if I'm not mistaken. But if not, both are from Pennsylvania, so there's probably a connection there. Excuse me. So I think there are guys they could go after. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that they, I know fans' dreams is throw them bag at Miles Bridges. I don't think that's a foregone conclusion that something like that will happen. But you also have to consider that if they hold onto their cap space and take a good chunk of it into the season, trades could pop up, or they could do a trade in the offseason with that cap space. So again, it's good to have options. Pistons have not had very many options over the last decade or so. So, there's many avenues they could walk down to try to improve the team.
Ben, what do you think of the, I guess, the push-pull between trying to be a play-in team semi-organically next year versus one more year of tanking?
Well, I mean, kudos to James for saying the thing that I've been feeling as well, which is, you know, the Pistons have not been patient and done a real rebuild for so long, right? I mean, this really started going all the way back to, you know, trading Chauncey Billups. We've been in fits and starts of retooling versus not fully rebuilding for so long that I do applaud the patience. I mean, I'm also a fan, so I get bored and frustrated with the losing. You know, this week was particularly frustrating with only one, you know, one win and then Cade going down with an injury. So, you know, in my head, I completely understand and agree with being patient. I think, you know, the trick is game to game, week to week, the grind of being a Pistons fan for the last decade plus, you know, that gets hard as well. You know, as I said this a couple weeks ago on the pod, right? Like, this was before Cade went down with an injury, but like, I don't think you should try to lose this year. I think you just play your best players. And as the word you use is perfect, organically. If that leads to wins, then I think you take that because that means you have internal development that's happening maybe a little bit ahead of schedule. And I think I would probably do the same thing next year, right? I mean, if everybody's healthy, you play your best guys and you get them experience winning basketball games. That matters, right? I mean, you know, look historically, how many NBA champions win the championship the first year they make the playoffs, right? That's not a thing that happens. And how many teams who make the playoffs make it to the Eastern Conference or Western Conference finals the first time around? It just doesn't happen that much. And I think the same is true for young teams who are trying to reach the playoffs, right? You don't always make it, you don't always make the jump from 25 wins to 41 wins in one season, right? It's incremental progress year over year, season after season. So yeah, I'm a fan of that. You do the best you can in the draft. If you hit big in free agency, that's awesome. But if you don't, I mean, I agree. Just play your best guys, push for the play-in. And if you don't make it, at least you have the experience of these young players having a real chance of getting after it and going for it like that.
Yeah. And I think we're seeing in Atlanta too, like the perils of trying to inorganically advance the state of your team. Like obviously they made the conference finals last year, and I think their first time in the playoffs since they drafted Trey, but they've had some chemistry issues. They obviously like had to make a trade already this season to resolve some of that. Yep. They are a very expensive team, and it doesn't look like they're a championship contender despite being as expensive as they are, and it's not going to get pretty much easier for them to get clean books. So yeah, it's the organic process is, or like doing it organically is absolutely paramount. You're right, Ben. To that end, James,
yes,
we know the Pistons like any of the top three guys, or we don't know that for sure, but I feel pretty confident in saying that they like any of the top three guys.
Yes.
Who, if you know, and if you're willing to divulge, if they were to win a couple more games or, you know, get some bad luck in the lottery, who are some of the guys that the Pistons are thinking about outside of those top three?
Yeah, I think the two names that come to mind for me are Arizona's Ben Mathe and Wisconsin's Johnny Davis. I think those two are right there behind the top three. And Laz, to my knowledge, they do very much like the top three guys. I think they're still sorting out the order in which they like them. But I think they are in lockstep that if they pick third, whatever of those three big guys is left over, I think that's who they go with. But if they end up with 4, 5, 6, I think you could see a combination of Ivy, Ben Mathe, or Johnny Davis from Wisconsin.
Yeah, I really need to do more Johnny Davis research, apparently. I see, like, Wisconsin guard, and my brain just turns off.
Yeah, I started going down the – that's hilarious. It takes you back to Jordan Taylor days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good old Jordan Taylor. And there's a bunch of other guards I can't think of from those grand Michigan State early 2010s matchups with the Badgers. But – yeah, I think I've been going down the rabbit hole with Johnny Davis. I think he has a little – I think – let me start with Ben Mathe, who I really like. And I'm going to say this in a good way, but I could understand how people are like, ew. He reminds me a little bit of KCP in college. I think he's more athletic than KCP. I think he's a probably better natural shooter but it's their games are very line drive. It's not mm-hmm. there's not much wiggle to their games, and of course guys might be able to add that, but naturally he's just point A to point B, and that can be a good thing. It could hurt him at the next level, but he's very point A to point B. Usually only takes like two or three dribbles before making a decision. There's not a lot of maneuvering and, again, wiggle with the ball. But I really like Ben Math. I think they really could use a guy of that athletic ilk who combines it with shooting. I think he's a dog that gets after it. And then Johnny Davis, a little bit more wiggle, not as explosive of an athlete, good size. I like him. I've liked him more now that I've like dug in and started watching some film instead of catching Wisconsin randomly here and there. I could see the intrigue there. But I do think that if the big three are gone, they go guard wing, as opposed to trying to address the, as you like to call it, Les, the jumpy jump front court guy.
Yeah, you can find jumpy jump front court guys outside of the top five
for sure.
So I'm not mad about that. I'm gonna say KCP is also the guy that I think of a little bit when I see Ben Math.
Yeah,
and we were talking about this actually on Detroit Bad Boys on like one of the fan posts earlier this week, and I'm gonna say it's the same thing I said there. It's like KCP was the third best guy on a championship team. Like,
yeah,
yes, like, the other two guys were LeBron James and Anthony Davis, but facts. Still, that counts for something.
No, facts. And it's like, I know Pistons fans are hot and cold on KCP, but like, you look up, KCP's been an NBA starter for quite some time now. It's not bad to have guys like that. And I think Ben Math he kind of just exploded onto the scene lately, so it's like you just never know what else he could go into. He has two things that are coveted, which is, and one of them you can't teach, which is that explosiveness, and then obviously the shooting appears to be pretty legitimate.
Man, KCP, that's a blast from the past. All right, James, so there was this stint in December where it felt like the entire league had COVID and fans were wondering if they were going to pause the season. Yeah. You know, as someone who covers the NBA and the Pistons professionally, what was that experience like working through, you know, that entire COVID outbreak and all that stuff?
Yeah, good question. It definitely wasn't as scary as the initial COVID wave in March of 2022, when we all had no idea what the hell this was. At that, by the point of December, I had been double vaxxed and boosted. So, I wasn't really worried. And credit to the Pistons, we didn't do in-person access from about just before Christmas until – when did we go out to Golden State? Was that the second week of January? Whenever – so from the week before Christmas to – the West Coast trip, the most recent one, there was no in-person access. So the Golden State start game, the practice before them, was the return of in-person access. So by then, everybody had come back. There was no COVID. Everybody who had COVID was back, aside from Jeremy and Kelly, who weren't around the team anyway because of the injuries. So it wasn't too bad, just because, I mean, we spent all of last year covering the team from home. What is another 2 weeks? And like I said, as soon as everybody got out of COVID protocols, they returned to in person. I guess there was a little bit of a scare, like traveling, with COVID really and the Omicron variant, just being on planes and stuff was a little nerve wracking, but I have no issue wearing my mask still. Like I don't leave anywhere with it. It doesn't bother me. I go into stores wearing the mask. Like I don't, even if it's not required, like I just, it doesn't bother me enough to not wear it. I'd rather be safe. So it wasn't too bad. It certainly is not ideal. Like obviously, as you guys know, like the whole roster was turned over during the COVID year. So, I mean, obviously traveling and covering this team is super important, but it's even more so important this year because I mean, there are times where I'm on the road where I might not even write that day, but it's just important to go, like, continue to build relationships with these guys because we just weren't around them their first year. Mm-hmm. It was good that we got a lot of in-person access leading up to the COVID outbreak, and then credit to the Pistons, as soon as everybody got out of protocols, they resumed in-person access. And I know there are some teams around the league who are not doing in-person access after they had outbreaks. So kudos to the Pistons for that. So it was definitely not fun, but it definitely wasn't as scary as the initial outbreak in 2020, of course.
That makes a ton of sense. That was a weird time to just like watch the team. It was a weird time to watch the league with just everything. Yeah,
it was not different. Fun. It was credit to the Motor City Cruise guys who gave it their all and even pulled out a win or two, if I recall. I know they beat the Spurs at home. I think there might have been one more, but it was tough to watch. And you know what? People were giving the league crap. I want to give the league kind of some credit. They kind of took the approach, obviously doing the research, like, okay, this variant is – everybody's getting it. It's very
contagious.
It's very contagious, but it's not it doesn't appear to be super crippling. Let's just go through this, keep pushing. Once everybody gets it, the teams will be back to normal. It'll be a weird basketball period for 2 weeks, but it's better than stopping and pausing. And who knows when you come back and you have to rework arenas, scheduling and stuff like that. So it might've been bad basketball for 2 weeks, but it worked out for the league because, I mean, when's the last time we've really had we've heard about somebody catching COVID, especially players, since kind of the outbreak died down.
Yeah. I think the thing I started to notice afterwards was like the players didn't get it as much, but you started to see more coaches kind of fall in and out.
Yep.
Like that's a little bit, you wonder if that's just like a ripple effect, but it's also far fewer coaches
for sure
than players. Absolutely. James, last thing I wanted to ask you about was Kelly Olynyk. Kelly Olynyk, since his return from injury and then a second round of COVID, I think has not looked quite right to me.
I'm with you.
Where do you think he's at, like with his like rehab and recovery?
Yeah, I'm with you. I just don't think he's moving well. to be fair, Kelly doesn't look like he's moving well when he is healthy. That's just how he is. But you can definitely tell that he's still working his way back. And I would also, he's had a weird year. And it's kind of hard to blame him because played the first 10 games, got hurt, came back, had COVID, or came back from the injury, then got COVID. He hasn't really looked – he's had moments here and there, but he hasn't really looked good this year. Like, he's not shooting the three ball well. He didn't do that. He didn't shoot it well before he got injured. Again, only 10 games. And if we were making assumptions on guys through the first 10 games of this season, it would be pretty bad if you look at how bad Frank and Sadiq started. And obviously they've turned it around. But Kelly he doesn't look right. I didn't realize he didn't shoot the ball as much as you would think he should. There's a lot of pump faking, a lot of trying to draw defenders into him instead of just letting it fly. I don't know if it's like him trying to find his rhythm and feeling uncomfortable, but he just doesn't look like he has any rhythm on the floor right now.
No, absolutely. And I know he's they rely on him a lot. He's a big part of the rotation. And so to have him not be playing up to the level that I'm sure he expects out of himself has been kind of a tough experience.
Yeah, it's definitely, it hasn't gone well. And part of it is not his fault. A good part of it is not his fault, but at the end of the day, I mean, he is, 31, 32, has played a lot of basketball. It's not crazy to think that, like, maybe he's just breaking down a little bit.
Yeah. It's also crazy to think he just, like, might need, like, another, like, week or two to get his legs underneath him.
That, too. Yep, for sure. Yeah, I don't think the Kelly Olynyk we've seen the last week is Kelly Olynyk we'll see forever, but it's certainly I mean, yeah, you questioned whether or not he just needs to find his rhythm, or if he's or if he's breaking down a little bit. I would say it's probably the former, just needs to find his rhythm, but time will tell.
Yeah. All right, Ben, that's everything I wanted to ask James. Did you have anything in the course of discussion that you're like, oh, actually, like, we need to talk to James about this?
Mm-hmm. James, I appreciate talking with me, and I could talk to you for a long time. I appreciate everything you contribute to the community. You're a great follow on Twitter, of course, but even better on The Athletic. If any of our listeners are somehow not yet subscribed, you will absolutely get your money's worth. If the only thing you read is James stuff, he's a fantastic writer. We're very fortunate to have him and the other great beat writers we have following the Pistons as well. So thanks so much for coming on, man. We really appreciate it.
Hey, I really appreciate that, man. That means a lot, especially coming from you two. I'm not just saying this because I'm on your podcast, but I do not listen to very many Pistons podcasts outside of, hell, I don't even listen to my own after it's done. but I listen to you guys. You guys do a great job. You guys are two very, I hate using the word intelligent, but very rational fans. I enjoy the dialogue with you guys. You guys know what you're talking about. You guys are a great partnership on this show. And like I said, I legitimately listen to you guys every week. Wow. Just to see if what people are talking about. You guys make points I might have missed and can dig on further. You guys are just a really good listen and follow too. So I appreciate you having me on. And as you guys know, anytime you need me, I'm just a call away or a DM away.
Thank you, James. I appreciate that. That means a lot to me. And I don't want to speak for Ben, but I know that that means a lot to him as well.
Yeah, co-sign completely. Really appreciate that.
Yeah. All right, Ben, you're not getting out of this. What's your one positive thing this week?
Oh, man, it was a rough week. There were a few things, though, that jumped out at me.
I was going to say, yeah, it was like, this is a bad week, so yeah. I'm very curious to see what he has to say.
Kind of a rough week. So I got to give honorable mention to Frank Jackson for shaving the mustache. I think he looks a million times better. And he played good, too, right? Like, so I don't know, maybe there was a there. But, I mean, I think I got to go with the obvious. We have to go with Cade Cunningham's second half performance against Cleveland. Man, what a fun game that was. Was that this week, Laz? Did we talk about that last week? No.
It feels like that happened like 3 weeks
ago. That was this week, right? Yeah.
It was Sunday.
Sunday after we recorded. That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, wow. What a fantastic performance in the second half after just struggling mightily in the first half, right? Turns it into a triple-double. Pistons win a game. He gets the bragging rights over Mobley, who has been, you know, Laz, the other guy that both of us kind of liked and has been playing really well all season. So, yeah, Cade Cunningham stepped up, led the team to a very enjoyable win, and, you know, continues. You know, his consistency is still the thing I think that he's going to keep working on over time. But, man, those are the performances that make all of us incredibly excited about the future and incredibly optimistic about what Cade Cunningham will be able to do. Thinking he's only 20 years old, 5 years from now, I mean, we could be having a really good time, Laz. That's what I'm hoping for.
Man, if we're still doing this podcast for a decade and like if team's finally good, I'm not going to act right. It's going to be great.
we'll have our sons will be joining us by then, I think, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Chance
and
Rowan will be co-hosting it by then.
All right, Ben. So the Pistons play Minnesota today. They fly to Dallas on Tuesday. They play Dallas on Tuesday. And they play Memphis at home on Thursday. And then they play the Hornets at home on Friday on the back-to-back. Per Cade's trainer on Twitter, everyone needs to go to that Hornets game and hype up Miles Bridges and let him know how much we love him so that he comes to Detroit in the offseason. But do you see how do you see the wins shaking out this week, Ben?
Man, with no Cade, I think that's a tall order. I'm looking forward to watching Dallas and Memphis, you know, teams I don't normally watch except for the highlights. Memphis in particular, you know, lots of fun to watch this year. I don't love our chances, though. I got to be honest. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of winnable games in the foreseeable future if Cade Cunningham's not playing.
I'm very much hoping that Charlotte game will be like the Cleveland game, where it's like, oh, hey, like the game that everybody actually plays well, and we sneak that one. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to not have the 20-game losing streak or whatever we have to Charlotte continue. All right, James, we are going to get you out of here, but first I'm going to get you in a little bit of trouble. Who you got in the Super Bowl, Joey Badass or Matthew Mid?
Matthew Mid, that's hilarious. Oh, I'm going Joey Burrow, baby. All day. I kind of grew up a closeted Bengals fan. I loved Ocho Cinco. I loved, if people remember, Rudy Johnson. I was a big Rudy Johnson fan for some reason. Like, in my peak Madden days, the Bengals were my squad. TJ, who's your mama? Peter Warwick, if you want to go even further back. Yeah. I like the Bengals. And Joe Burrow is just cool. Anybody who says they're too rich for fake jewelry is good in my book. And I made a lot of sweeping conclusions on Matthew Stafford, so I need him not to win a title. I'm that guy. I'm a hater.
Yeah, you need to be validated. Ben, who you got in the Super Bowl?
I got the commercials, man. That's what I got.
And the halftime show. That's actually going to be cool.
That's true. No, I mean, I think, I'm not a huge NFL guy, but it has been interesting to watch. Not so much Matthew Stafford, but the fans who follow Matthew Stafford. I think that's been really interesting.
Interesting is a good word. I thought you said fun. Yeah.
It's been interesting. So, yeah, I don't really care who wins, but, it's always a fun experience.
I am just more shocked than anything that the Bengals are in the Super Bowl.
Really?
Yeah. And so I find myself kind of gravitated towards that just because you've got this like plucky underdog-ish team that has never been good versus this like collection of dudes who have been all pros in the past
who were built to get to this moment,
right? Yeah. And so it's it'll be I like that dichotomy. I like the Bengals, but yeah, it's a lot of Matthew Stafford love in Detroit, which surprised me. To say the least. All right, James, I think you escaped that without getting in too much trouble, so you're good.
And I mean, I've done enough of my Stafford hate. Like, he was brought in to get to the Super Bowl. He got to the Super Bowl. I'll eat my words. But best believe, if they had lost either the first game or second game, I was getting those tweets off. I was. Sure. So now that I can't, I will. Congratulations to Stafford. Congrats to the fans who were so adamant that no matter where he went, he would be good. I can't even say that, as much as I want to say that I still don't believe in that. He did it. He had a good performance. So I'm going to shut up and eat my words.
There you go. All right, James, thank you again so much for coming on. We truly appreciate it. Let the people know where they can find you, where they can find what you're working on prior to the trade deadline. Is the Athletic running any sales right now, or?
That's a good question. I'm sure there's a sale somewhere to be found, whether it's on the Athletic site or I actually haven't even checked out the New York Times site to see if we're like on there now. That could be coming soon. But yeah, I'm on Twitter at JL Edwards III Athletic. If you're not listening or if you're not following, under the Pistons tab at the Athletic. I co-host the Bun and Cardigan Show with Nicholas Henkel. We drop every Monday except this Monday because we're just going to wait till after the deadline and I'm on the road. And if you're listening to this on Monday, my piece, my final Pistons trade deadline guide is up, where I put together the final things of what I'm hearing regarding the team, kind of put everything into tiers, players into tiers of who I think's most likely to get traded, who's not likely to get traded. And then I have two or three trades that I haven't heard would happen, but trades that I look around the league and I like. So it's kind of a package of everything you would want to see at the deadline. So check that out at The Athletic on Monday.
I can't wait to read that to Chance in the morning.
But Daddy, why are they trading Corey?
Ben, let the people know where they can find you, where they can find what you've been working on this week.
At BR Galker on Twitter. You can always find me in the comments at DetroitBadBoys.com, particularly these podcast posts. We continue to appreciate your support for the podcast, for the website. Thanks for listening.
And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Last Chance. That's at LazChance. All right, this has been the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And we will talk to you all next week. See ya.